Good evening and welcome to Late Night Live with Pastor Al. Got a Bible question? Wondering what to make of current events? Call now at 888-677-9673. That's 888-677-9673. Now open your Bibles, open your minds, and join in the conversation with your Late Night Live host, Pastor Al Davis.
Well, good evening and welcome to another edition of Late Night Live with Pastor Al. I'm your host, Pastor Al Davis. Be with you until midnight tonight. Hope you'll stick with us here on your radio. And, of course, if you're having trouble getting us on the air with your radio, you can always try at whkwradio.com and listen online. Our home station here is AM 1220, The Word, out of Independence, Ohio, just outside of Cleveland in northeastern Ohio. And we have, they have a great app that you can actually download where you can listen to the programming as well. So we welcome you to the program here tonight and certainly invite you to check us out online at livewithpastoral.com. That's livewithpastoral.com. And you can give us a call here this evening. We're going to have a guest joining us hopefully in a few minutes, and we're going to be talking about the situation in Israel right now, and then we're going to open up for some phone calls here a little bit later, and let's see, I think our guest called me on my cell phone, and let me see if I can see what's going on here. I'm trying to juggle several things at the same time here. He said he's calling in and no one's answering, so he's probably dialed the wrong number. So let me see if I can do several things at one time. It's like chewing gum and walking at the same time here. And let me just try something here. But our phone number here, maybe this will help me type it at the same time, is 888-677-9673. That's 9673. And you can give us a call, and we're going to be talking about the situation in Israel and the what's happening, just some updates on some of the things, also addressing some of the propaganda that's out there. And I sent a text here, managed to do it. I think I got the right number on there. Hopefully he'll get the text here and open it up here in just a minute here. Otherwise, let's see. Trying to juggle things here. I was hoping that he would call in by now. Let me try something different here. I don't know if I could do this, if this will work or not, but live radio, you got to juggle several things at one time, I guess. All right, I think we're back now. You know, we figured out what happened. Apparently we had an Amber Alert here in northeastern Ohio because it went off. I was in the studio here and my phone buzzed and our guest was trying to call in about the time and he's calling in from out of state and no knowledge of an Amber Alert going on here. That's the only thing we can understand because it just overrides the phones here. So you learn. Never had an Amber Alert going off while we had somebody trying to call in before, but live and learn. But I believe that we are joined now by our guest, Michael Goldstein. And are you with us now, Michael?
I am with you, Pastor.
Well, there we go. It's like we figured out. We think we had you called in when we had an Amber Alert going on here. And that, of course, overrides your phones. And that
was
would
missing?
What's that?
Amber Alert
it was for for you. You were missing. Yeah, we found you, so it's over. I was sitting here in the studio. My cell phone buzzed. Even though I had it silenced, it still buzzes because, you know, it's an Amber Alert. So I apologize to our listeners. That threw us for a loop here because, you know, we had everything planned out, everything sorted out, and then always some little hiccup that comes on. But at any rate, we're glad that you found your way back to the phone and then got connected with us. But I want to welcome you to the program. You've been on with us before. And, of course, just so our listeners have a little understanding of your background, we'll let you explain a little bit about your situation. But I remember when I first met you, you were introduced as somebody who had some experience in naval intelligence, and they were talking about little things. And I remember turning my wife saying, I know what he did. And I think I remember going up to you afterwards saying, you know, I'm probably the only person in this room that actually knows what you did. And I remember you looking at me kind of like, yeah, right. Until we start talking for a little bit, because, you know, I was in the old Electronic Security Command of the United States Air Force. And had I stayed in, I could have wound up at ROTA, where I know you were at ROTA for a while. But I spent most of my time at RAF Chicksands in England, which gave me a little advantage when I went off base. Had I been stationed at ROTA, it would have been a little more challenging. But notwithstanding, some of the accents got a little challenging, especially when up to Scotland. But you know, one of the advantages from, you know, being in that area is you do learn some of the things that are happening in the world behind the scenes, and it does help you afterwards, even years later, when you're looking what's happening in the world. Of course, you were involved in that area a lot longer than I was, but give our listeners a little bit of background here. And, you know, I was saying in the last hour that, you know, you've got some experience with this that makes you uniquely situated to discuss this. And so if you can give our viewers a little bit, or our listeners a little bit of background on yourself and some of the things that gives you some credibility on this subject. So go ahead.
Sure. Just to clear it up for your viewers.
Yeah, viewers, yes.
ROTA is in Spain. It's a Spanish naval base.
Yes.
I was stationed for 3 years. With the Navy equivalent of the Air Force Electronic Security Command, the Naval Security Group. And I was an enlisted linguist, and then later I became an officer, a cryptology officer. I was on active duty for 4 years and the active reserves for 26 years, where we ran an active duty mission out of the reserve centers throughout the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is a lot better than sitting around and doing correspondence courses, which is what a lot of people have to do,
mm-hmm.
because there's nothing professional for them to do. So anyway, I've been in the intelligence. I was in the intelligence community for about 30 years. Whatever I have to say today is not the disclaimer, not necessarily, or even probably, the opinion of the Navy, the Naval Security Group, the Department of Defense, and the Biden administration.
Or the Air Force.
So,
since I'm here.
Oh, well, the Air Force. No. I've sung the Air Force song, something about Up in the Air, Junior Birdman.
Something like that. Yeah, you have to get your goggles on.
But anyway,
on. Never mind.
When you first came, goggles, you first came and talked to me about this. We were at a dinner, I think, when you came over. And we realized that we were not allowed to talk to each other about any of it. It's all still classified.
But there was a lot of silence. We just kind of, a lot of silence.
We knew what we were not talking
about. Yeah, and we redacted ourselves appropriately. So,
yeah. So you bring a background like that to whatever issues. My wife and I have been to Israel several times, and we love it there. It's very interesting because they treat you like tourists, no matter what your background is, until they find out that you are in the U.S. military, and then they light up because they say, well, everyone here is in the Army, and then they can identify with you. It's pretty interesting. I have been talking since the beginning of this slaughter to a lot of Israeli friends, some who live in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those are dual citizens, American and Israeli, and some who live in Israel, some who live back in Cleveland, we moved from Beechwood to the Phoenix area 2 years ago, almost exactly 2 years ago. And first of all, these folks, of course, are very worried about their relatives, their families in Israel. And, but more than that, they are consumed by a white-hot anger and fury against what happened to their towns and villages and their families and the people who were living there. And I need to make something clear because it's been a little confusing the way it's come through on the national media that these Israeli cities and towns are in Israel. They are Israeli territory. They've always been Israeli territory. The mainstream media seems to imply that this was land that was Palestinian land that was occupied by Israel, and that these terrorists, these evil people, were somehow liberating their own land. It's a complete falsehood. It is Israel proper that they came in the same as if they invaded the United States and started chewing up villages, raping people. So I want to make that clear. Some of my Israeli friends are very concerned that the Americans get the wrong impression of what this was about. Secondly, I was on the Bob France show on the 9th, and that's archived in Bob's podcast that anybody can go to.
Actually, let me interrupt just a second on that note for our listeners outside of northeastern Ohio. Bob France is on the local Salem program here, 1420, sister station to 1220 where I'm on. And some of our listeners outside of northeastern Ohio have heard Bob France filling in for Sebastian Gorka on the Salem stations and other parts of the country. He's filled in Sebastian Gorka, Hugh Hewitt, just different ones that are on there. He's somebody who's filled in, but he is local here in the Cleveland area. So,
yeah, one day when I was out shopping at a grocery store here in the Phoenix area, I got back into my car and turned on the car and the radio came on. It was tuned to 960, the local AM Salem station. And there was Bob France filling in for Dennis Prager.
Yes.
So driving home, I called in and he saw my name come up on the board. And he was very excited to talk to me about the Kerry Lake campaign that was going on at the time for governor. So, but I talked to, when I was on Bob's show, he asked me a question. He said, what kind of aid is Israel looking for? Is it humanitarian aid or what? And I told him that Israel is not looking for humanitarian aid. They're fine in that regard. What they are not looking for, what they absolutely do not want, is American military troops. They don't need them. They don't want them. And the last thing they want is for American soldiers and sailors and airmen to go into harm's way to protect Israel, because Israel can protect itself and give us the tools. We will do the job, is what they're saying, and let us do the job. That refers to I'll get into that in a minute. But what they are looking for is aircraft parts, because they fly a lot of American airplanes that they have much improved, like the F-16, the F-15, now the F-35. They still may have some A-4 Skyhawks hanging around. I don't know. And they need bombs and they need bullets. And it's my understanding, I haven't confirmed this, that this is not what they're looking for now is not U.S. military aid that has now to be appropriated by the Congress. They're paying for this. They're paying for these munitions as they come in. And we, Alan, I know, Pastor Alan, I both know that when you get into a shooting war, you're expending ammunition at about three times the rate you think you're going to. So they need that kind of help. And they're all set to do the job. Now, what I was getting at a minute ago is that in past Israeli incursions into Gaza, which they did because Hamas and Palestinian Jihad, Islamic Jihad, were shooting missiles into Israeli population centers trying to kill civilians. So whenever Israel would go down into Gaza and start to defend themselves by taking out military targets in Gaza, the Europeans and the Americans and all the NGOs in the world were saying, oh, no, you can't be killing people. We have to stop the fighting. You need to stop the fighting immediately. And there would be a lot of pressure put on Israel, both by the Europeans and by the United States, to stop what they were doing and don't do anything further militarily. And in the past, Israel has bowed to that pressure. I don't see that happening this time because of this white-hot anger. Mm-hmm. And they know if they don't finish the job now, it'll just be coming back and coming back and coming back, and they'll never be done with it. I think their intent is to go into Gaza and take out every military bunker, every command post. I know that I want to talk about the targeting that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, when Israel would attack into Gaza, they had rules of engagement. Anybody who's listening who's been in the military knows what those are. But rules that they have to follow and rules that are created by their own military and their own government tell them what they can do and what they can't do, cannot do. They were not allowed to, mostly they're not allowed to attack military targets if there could be collateral damage that would endanger civilians in the area. That is incredibly restrictive, and the United States military doesn't follow that pattern. International law of armed conflict allows the attacking of military targets if there's sufficient reason to do so, and to attack them even though there may be collateral damage to civilian property and civilian lives, because sometimes that's what an army has to do. In the past, if the Israelis knew that there was a certain building in Gaza, an apartment building or a hospital or a school or a mosque, which is where Hamas stores a lot of their, has their headquarters in many cases and stores a lot of weapons, the Israelis would drop leaflets on the particular building, say it's an apartment building, and the leaflets would say in Hebrew and Arabic, there are missiles stored in your basement by Hamas. Please get out. We're going to bomb your building at 4 o'clock, something like that. And the Israelis have everybody's cell phone numbers who lives in the building. They would call them up and tell them that your building is going to be bombed. You need to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the time would come to bomb it, usually they have flat roofs, and usually a lot of the civilians were up on the roofs of their buildings so the Israelis wouldn't bomb them. And they would come in with a flashbang and scare them off the roof and then bomb the building if they could. Whereas the United States doesn't. We don't do that. We go in and we do the job. Just ask the Marines. Anyway, so I don't think they're going to have those restrictive rules of engagement this time. They're going to go into Gaza. And if you look at the news feeds you're getting from the Hamas news sources in Gaza, they're saying the Israelis are bombing and targeting Gaza civilians. And it's just not true. They don't want to. They don't want to hurt people. They don't have the munitions to expend them on that. The problem is that this Palestinian Islamic Jihad and Hamas have put their munitions in schools and hospitals and mosques and their command centers. They'll run out of hospitals quite often. And this time, the Israelis, I think, are going to go slowly into Gaza, north to south, street by street, and destroy Hamas as they go and take out all their infrastructure. Pastor Al, can I go into a little of the history of Gaza so people will understand what it is?
Absolutely. And I was going to point out, too, of course, because our listeners, we've talked about some of this here. Gaza, for our listeners, is where the ancient Philistines were. And in the Bible, you remember the story of David and Goliath, the Philistines. That gives you an idea. But go ahead, give some of the history that brings us to where we're at today.
Yeah, well, prior to 1967, which was the time of the Six-Day War in the Middle East, when Israel won that war very quickly, Gaza was a part of Egypt. It belonged to Egypt. And after the fighting was over, after the 6 days were over and Israel had won, the Israelis found themselves occupying Gaza, which is part of Egypt. And they tried to give it back, but the Egyptians didn't want it. So they were kind of stuck. So Israelis went into Gaza. They established settlements there. They established businesses there. They built little towns there. And they employed a lot of Gazans as their employees. It was like economic development. There were a lot of people making their livings and feeding their families through Israeli-owned businesses. But there was a lot of terrorism against the Israelis there. And in 2005, Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon decided he was going to give Gaza back to the Gazans. And he did. And this was a very difficult time for Israel because there are people who had built homes and cities there, towns, and they were forcibly removed from those towns by the Israeli government in an operation that cost the Israelis about $2 billion. They didn't want to leave Gaza, and they were required to leave Gaza by the government. And the repercussions are still going on in Israel today for that disruption of removing the Israelis. And when they did, they left behind them the business infrastructure for the Gazans to take over and have businesses running. They had a lot of small farms and greenhouses that were truck farms, and they were operating businesses, and Hamas destroyed them all. They destroyed all of these businesses, all of the farms, because they were Israeli in origin. And they did not let the Gazan citizens take advantage of them. So Sharon did this he was trading Gaza for peace. He was promised peace by Hamas. And that's not what Israel got. What they got were terrorist attacks from 2005 until this very day out of Gaza. That's what they got. And they were never allowed by the international community to go forward and rectify that problem. And now they're going to.
Well, and when you look at it, it's counter to what you see in much of the media, where Israel is presented as these occupiers. And I was telling people that, one of the ways when you look at some of these news sources, they refer to Israel as occupiers, is generally a good bet that their news is slanted, in favor of Hamas and all. And so then the Hamas terrorists are being portrayed as resistance fighters and militant freedom fighters fighting against these evil Israeli occupiers, when yet, as you pointed out, the history suggests otherwise. Israel gave all this over to them and pulled the Israelis out of the Gaza Strip, only to be rewarded with terrorist activity. Am I right?
That's exactly right.
And so what does that say about the news that portrays Israel as occupiers and the Hamas as freedom fighters? It suggests a little propaganda issue going on there, doesn't it?
Well, here's the problem. There's a chant where the Arabs are chanting. They're saying from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free.
Right.
What they're talking about is from the Jordanian. They don't want to. They've been offered a state of their own maybe 20 times since even before 1948, mm-hmm. when Israel was reconstituted. Every time they have turned it down, because what they don't want is to have a state living side by side with Israel in peace.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what they want. They want all Jews out of what is now the land of Israel.
Right.
And when they're asked the question, well, where are all these Jews going to go? They say, we don't care. Let them go back to Poland. Things like that, as though all mm-hmm. the Jews came from Poland. But there are 7 million Jews and 2 million Christians. And we see what they mean and how they will make it free of Jews. We saw a little preview of that last week and this
yes.
week. They will kill them. They will slaughter them. They will cut off their heads. They will kill little babies. That's what they mean. And the Israelis are not going to let that happen. When Israel had no sovereignty of its own, when Jews were in foreign countries, they had no sovereignty. They had no power. They couldn't protect themselves. One of the points of the reconstitution of the state of Israel in the Middle East after 3,100 years of living there, and by the way, there is continuity of Jews living in that land for 3,100 years, even though the Romans had expelled them. They didn't all leave. So they're the original inhabitants there.
Mm-hmm.
So with that continuity, they swore they would not leave their fate in the hands of other nations, and they were powerless. Now they have their own army, they have their own navy, and circling back a bit about not wanting American troops on the ground to help them. As far as I know, with my military background of 30 years, there have been no large-scale exercises between Israeli army ground forces and American ground forces. They don't have a similar doctrine. They haven't worked together, and it would be very bad to have American troops there on the ground next to the Israeli. Excuse me, coughing a little today.
Mm-hmm.
And the navies have Israel. The Israeli Navy has worked very closely with the U.S. Navy, and the Air Forces
mm-hmm.
have trained together both in Nevada
right.
and in the Middle East. They've had exercises, so there could be some cooperation there. But that's not what the Israelis want. They're going to do the job themselves.
Well, and certainly they're shown themselves in the past to be very capable, and so certainly we certainly pray for their success there. That brought up another area, and we got just about a minute left in this segment here, and if you can hold over for a little while longer, maybe we
sure.
can address some of the I call it propaganda that's being put out by Israel's enemies, and one of them, and you've touched on this a little bit about the Israeli military, the Israeli Defense Forces, and one of the things that's being suggested is that there's some kind of division or lack of enthusiasm, and that many of the reservists are refusing to be called up. So maybe we can pick that up as we come into the next half hour. I'm sure you've got something to say about that, but I want our listeners
sure.
to stay tuned. We've got another half hour to go. We're talking with Michael Goldstein, 30-year military veteran, talking about the situation in Israel. So stay tuned. We got our half hour to go. You're listening to Late Night Live with Pastor Al. I'm your Late Night Live host, Pastor Al Davis, pastor of the Bible Baptist Church in Richfield, Ohio. I want to invite you to visit us at the Bible Baptist Church in Richfield. The Bible Baptist Church meets at 4174 Wheatley Road, Suite 200 in Richfield, midway between Akron and Cleveland, just off both Interstate 77 and Interstate 271. The Bible Baptist Church meets each Sunday morning for Bible study at 10 a.m., morning worship at 11 a.m., and evening worship at 6 p.m. The Bible Baptist Church also meets each Friday night at 7 p.m. for an informal Bible study where you get to bring the questions just like on Late Night Live with Pastor Al. Even if we don't see you at the Bible Baptist Church, we want to see you in heaven. Jesus says in the Bible, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me." Why? Well, because the Bible says there is none righteous, no, not one. We are all as an unclean thing, and all our righteousnesses are as filthy rags. For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. The Bible also says, "Wherefore, as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. For the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life through Jesus Christ our Lord. For when we were yet without strength, in due time Christ died for the ungodly. But God commended his love toward us, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Much more then, being now justified by his blood, we shall be saved from wrath through him. And so the Bible says that if thou shalt confess with thy mouth the Lord Jesus, and shalt believe in thine heart that God hath raised him from the dead, thou shalt be saved. For with the heart man believeth unto righteousness, and with the mouth confession is made unto salvation. For the scripture saith, whosoever believeth on him shall not be ashamed. For whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. I like that. Whosoever, that means you. If this show has been a blessing to you, why not let us know? You can contact us by writing to Pastor Al Davis at Post Office Box 452, Richfield, Ohio, 44286. Our email address is pastoral@maplenoel.us. You can also visit our website at livewithpastoral.com. That's livewithpastoral.com. Or you can call us at 330-659-6561. We'd love to hear from you, but now let's get back to our program. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Late Night Live with Pastor Al. I'm your host, Pastor Al Davis. I'll be with you until midnight tonight right here on your radio station, and I hope you'll be able to stick with us here tonight. And in a little bit, we're going to open up the phone lines. If somebody has a question, we're joined in on the air tonight with Michael Goldstein, 30-year veteran, the Navy intelligence and or the intelligence field there, and we're getting some insights on what's happening in Israel. And so I want you to check us out online at livewithpastoral.com. That's livewithpastoral.com, and you can find out more about me there. You can also listen to past services past programs there. And if you're in an area where you don't hear our first hour, you can look at, listen to that there. And we got some other materials there and some articles and such that I've got on there different things that I put together all at livewithpastoral.com. There's also a link to our home church, the Richfield Bible Baptist Church, where I am the pastor. We're a small church, and we meet in a commercial space. And I tell people, if you're looking for us, don't look for a building with a steeple. Look for our door. All that information will come up at the end of the program, and I won't go through for time's sake all that right now. But check us out online, livewithpastoral.com. That's livewithpastoral.com. And if you have a question for us tonight dealing with the situation over in Israel, the number is 888-677-9673. That's 888-677-9673. And we'll be opening up the phones for those calls if anybody has a question about that here in a few minutes. But as I said, we're talking with Michael Goldstein, veteran of the United States Navy, and we are talking about the situation there. He's got contacts with some people inside of Israel and all. And Michael Goldstein, glad you're able to stay with us here into the next half hour. So glad to have you.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, and I like listening to you all the time anyway.
Well, I appreciate that. And as we went into the break, I asked you a question because I kind of wanted to look at some of the things that are happening. You know, one of the things I learned during my relatively brief time with Air Force intelligence, you were in Naval intelligence, so it's complimentary, many things similar, but I learned a few things about the Russians, and one of them is that they're masters of propaganda. And not only that, I learned how much the world's media, the media that most people take for granted as being honest and straightforward, how corrupt and biased it is, and how much oftentimes it was controlled during the Cold War days, certainly by Russian efforts and things. But we're seeing some of that going on with the war in Israel right now. One of the questions I asked you about going into the break, this is something that I've heard is, and people ask me questions at church at our Bible study, and plus I listen to things online and things, and people have been saying, well, the Israeli military, they're dispirited, and there's division, and many of the reservists don't want to show up. How would you respond to that?
Yeah, I saw a story about this in the Associated Press right after the fighting started. There is an issue. issue in Israel. They're trying to, the government is trying to reform the judiciary. There are some things going on with the judiciary which are very strange that we would never put up with here. Just for example, one of them is that the Israeli Supreme Court, people should understand that there is a political left-right divide in Israel as there is in the United States and other places. But mostly the Israeli judiciary is very liberal and on the left. And a few years ago, the Supreme Court of Israel has granted itself the authority to take any statute, any law passed by the legislature, and apply this standard to it. If they decide it's unreasonable, they cancel it. Now, would we stand for our Supreme Court doing something like that? We don't like your law, so we're going to cancel it, which puts you no longer have a real separate checks and balances between the
right.
branches of government. You don't. So that's one of the things the Israeli government is trying to fix. Also, the Supreme Court justices had the final word on who would replace them when somebody would retire or die. And they would always choose somebody on the left. So nothing would ever change in the Israeli judiciary. There were other issues as well. And the government was trying to change that. There were demonstrations in the streets of Israel on both sides. When you look at the American media and the European media, they always say that these are people who are angry about the proposed changes and it's the end of democracy in Israel. What you generally see on the left.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, for the streets being full of demonstrators, there was no violence whatsoever. There was no violence whatsoever. Some reservists, getting to your point, when everybody's in the reserve there, everybody does active duty in the 2 or 3 years there in the reserves forever, until they're 65, I think. Some of them signed a letter saying they were reservists, and if they were called up, they wouldn't come. They just wouldn't show up. Well, when push came to shove here, everybody showed up, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody said they're sitting this one out because it's their homes and their families. You know, they have no depth. They're fighting with their homes right across the street behind them, you know. And but what the article in the Associated Press said was that because of this judicial reform, a lot of reservists weren't going to show up, and the Arabs, Hamas, took that to be a weakness in the Israeli military, and that's what caused them to come in and attack
right.
Israeli towns and cities, which is absolute baloney, aside from the fact that they've been planning this for 2 years. You know, the timeline doesn't work, but that's one of the ways the media buys into this propaganda that Hamas is putting out. You know, the very first article I ever wrote really for publication was in AmericanThinker.com let's not talk about the Department of Education. I wrote about that too. Fantasy War Reporting in AmericanThinker.com on August 8, 2014. What was happening was in 2012, there was an incursion, Israeli incursion into Gaza because the missiles were flying. And the Gazan minister of, he's the propaganda minister, really, but he's in charge of the foreign press there. He got the press together and he said to them, you can't report casualties, including Hamas fighters. You can't do that. All casualties are to be reported as women and children. Okay. Well, that, of course, doesn't make any sense. You're telling me the vaunted Israeli Defense Forces didn't kill any fighters? They only killed women and children? So, patently, on its face, it's ridiculous. But if the press wants to operate in Gaza, they have to do what they say.
Right.
Aside from that, what happens is, at that time, and I haven't confirmed that it's still like this, but Hamas would report its casualty figures I think it was to the Red Cross. It might have been the United Nations. I'm not going to reread my article and look. But and then that the Red Cross would report it in Israel to the Western news media, and they would just print it as though it were the gospel truth. And, of course, it's all made up, and it's ridiculous. So I tend to write for publication when something really annoys me, and obviously this did.
Mm-hmm.
So when you listen to the media regarding casualties, especially civilian casualties in Gaza, take it with a grain of salt. Try to confirm it some other way. I do want to talk about this is from 7 Israel News.
Mm-hmm.
That talks about just, I guess, yesterday, Israeli fighter jets operating in the Gaza Strip killed the Hamas commander of the forces who was responsible for the Kibbutz Nirim massacre. They killed him, and they also killed some other Hamas and Islamic Jihad terror operatives at the same time. Here's what they targeted. The IDF, all Israeli Defense Forces, also struck over 100 military targets located in Gaza, impacted the capabilities of Hamas terrorist organization by targeting its operational command centers, military compounds, dozens of missile launchers, anti-tank missile launch posts, and observation posts. Furthermore, operational command centers belonging to the Islamic Jihad terror organization were struck. That's what they're aiming at. Gaza has a tremendously tight population density.
Mm-hmm.
There are civilians, and I'm sure some civilians were hurt or even killed by these attacks. But they were not the targets. Israel will never target civilians. The reservists all reported for duty, to the best of my knowledge, and they're there fighting. I'll tell you what worries me. When you look at how Hamas has dug in and built tunnels and bunkers and everything for decades, I'm reminded of Tarawa. I'm reminded of Okinawa and Iwo Jima, and in Saipan, there were actual civilians living there, and the Japanese were fighting us street by street. So that kind of urban warfare is very difficult, and I'm afraid there are going to be serious Israeli casualties, because that's the nature of urban warfare. So
right.
We're all praying for them. I do want to mention something. There was a meeting of a conservative group here on Thursday night, United Patriots, and I was asked to sing the Star Spangled Banner for the start of the meeting, and I did that. But we also brought translation into English and a transliteration from Hebrew to English of the Israeli national anthem, Hatikva, which means the hope,
mm-hmm.
completely unmilitant national anthem. And it was a mostly Christian evangelical audience. And I said, I'm not asking anybody to sing another nation's national anthem if they don't want to. But I believe that most of the people here have a spiritual bond with the state of Israel. And if you want to sing it, I would appreciate it. And everybody, I sang it and people sang along with me. So we have a lot of support from the Christian community. Israel does.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jewish people do. So
yeah. Well, and
used to be.
Yeah, I was going to say, as I've been watching different things, it really has been amazing, especially considering how often Israel is spoken against at the UN and things like that. The support that we've seen in other parts of the world, the Brandenburg Gate, the Eiffel Tower, different things where they've had the Sydney Opera Houses, they've had, the flag of Israel and the blue and the white colors shining up on there. And it has been heartening because it shows that many people in the world have reacted instinctively in horror at the absolute brutality that we saw, and we're finding out that what we saw at first is already scratched the surface. Just unbelievable. But And so my hope and prayer, of course, is that much of that concern for Israel will continue. But yeah, I mean, Israel is fighting for their very existence in this, aren't they?
They are. Well, they're always fighting for their very existence. I believe in the efficacy of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
I would urge all Christians to pray for Israel and the peace of Jerusalem.
Yes.
But I think it's important. Pastor El, do we have time to talk about the overall strategic situation there?
Yes, we do, actually. We've not had anybody call in. We've got, I think, about a good 10-plus minutes to go. And again, I will give out that phone number again if somebody does want to call in with a question. That's 888-677-9673. But, I mean, when we look at this, and that's, of course, one of the reasons I did want to have you on is because of some of your insights, both with the, you know, the intelligence community and the American military and then also having contacts in Israel and with the, you know, people who are in the Israeli Defense Forces and all. Why don't you speak on that? I think that would be very good, very helpful.
Okay, well, first, picture Israel.
Mm-hmm.
About the size of the state of New Jersey. When you superimpose the state of Israel on the state of Ohio on a map, you can fit four states of Israel into the state of Ohio, north to south. That's about how big it is. It's not all that big. On the west side, it's all the Mediterranean Sea. On the east side, you have Judea and Samaria, which was the biblical home of the Jewish people, which people now sometimes call the West Bank. Then in the south, you've got Gaza. And then in the north, you have Lebanon, and you have Syria, and you have Hezbollah, which is a militant group affiliated with Iran. And Iran pulls the strings there, provides the weapons, provides the money, as it does for Hamas in Gaza, too. By the way, the weapons that the Israelis are finding in Israel when they kill the terrorists, they're all made in Iran. Iran provides about 90% of the budget of Gaza. So, and he who pays for it, you know, they're responsible for what happens there. Mm-hmm. And we're sure this is all planned by Iran. But in the north, Hezbollah has much more sophisticated missiles than does Hamas in Gaza. They're longer range. They have more accuracy. And they have about 150,000 of them, okay? This is enough to flatten most of Israel. And Iran is using this as a strategic deterrence to keep Israel from coming in and taking out its nuclear weapons program. One second.
Okay. What's that?
I was talking to one of my local critics here.
Oh, okay. thought we lost you there for a moment.
Well,
but,
No. Yeah. I'll get to that in a minute. I will talk about that. They feel that they can keep Israel from attacking their nuclear program, their infrastructure, and their research by threatening them with Hezbollah and 150,000 missiles in the north. And maybe it's true, but Iran has a small dilemma here. People are talking about a two-front war against Israel, from the south with Hamas and from the north with Hezbollah. But if Hezbollah attacks Israel from the north, what happens to Iran's strategic deterrent? It's a card that will have been played.
Mm-hmm.
And there is nothing to deter Israel from destroying Iran's nuclear program. And by the way, with the U.S. 6th Fleet, two carriers now, aircraft carriers,
right,
I understand, in the Eastern Med, where I worry about them because they should not be in such restricted waters. Look at what happened to the British in the Mediterranean in World War II. It's landlocked, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's very dangerous for them, and I worry about our sailors. I always worry about the Navy sailors. But perhaps they are there to deter Iran. I don't know. After all, it's the current administration that released the funds that, because money is fungible, Iran felt it could spend other money and create the weaponry and everything for the Gazans. So I don't know what the position of the administration is. They say that they support the state of Israel. I hope they don't try to make them stop their offensive. And I don't know exactly what the Sixth Fleet is doing there. You wanted to mention that I don't want to get too much into religion, but the religion of Islam calls for the destruction of the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very difficult just to fight them politically and militarily when it's at the foundation of their religion. So, but that's a topic that we would, we could go into at another time because it's a really expensive project.
And it is something that we've touched on as well in our program.
We've talked about it over the past 15 years. And its ramifications in the United States, in our educational system, and all of that. So so that's what's going on strategically. Don't know what's going to happen in the north. Israel and Hezbollah are trading artillery shells, and there have been some missile attacks into Israel from Hezbollah. Israel has moved civilians south out of the danger zone there. They don't want any more civilians. Israeli civilians kidnapped or killed. They have also been attacking, the Israeli Air Force has been attacking weapons convoys, taking missiles from Syria down into Lebanon to give to Hezbollah. And I just saw something about Israeli helicopters just went into Lebanon to shoot up some more missiles, some more weapons that Hezbollah has. So things are simmering on the northern front, and on the southern front, there's a full-fledged war going on.
Right.
And we don't know what will happen in the next several days. Did you want to mention that I'll be on Bob France tomorrow?
Yeah, we got about 3 minutes left, and we'll mention that. But I was actually going to speculate just a minute with some of your knowledge and some information you've been privy to. Do you foresee, because every once in a while you hear talk about another front possibly happening with Syria, you know, there along the Golan Heights, and even some people have suggested, what if Jordan should get destabilized doing this? Do you see any potential of any of those things happening?
Well, Jordan does not want to be destabilized, and the Israelis are working very closely with the Jordanians so that does not happen.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever Jordan would fight Israel, it was a big mistake for them.
Right.
We know that.
Right.
And what was, the Golan Heights in Syria. Syria desperately wants the Golan Heights. Israel cannot defend itself with an enemy on the Golan Heights.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever been there, and there are a lot of Christians who take tours to Israel, when Syria was occupying the Golan in the 1940s and 50s and 60s, early 60s, Israeli farmers in the Galilee were taking mortar fire from there. I mean, it's just the heights overlooking the Galilee. And there were snipers, and Israeli farmers would drive the tractor with one hand and with a machine gun in the other hand. It was unsupportable. And when Israel was attacked in 1967, they fought tremendous tank battles on the Golan, and they took the Golan, and they annexed it, actually. It's considered a part of Israel now, and Hezbollah and the Syrian army would fight like crazy, given half the chance to take it back. Israel cannot exist without its possession.
Yeah.
Golan Heights.
Well, Michael, I hear the music coming, so we got just under a minute to go. And
okay,
I want to thank you for taking time to be with us on the radio. Here locally, you're going to be on our sister station, 1420, AM 1420, with Bob France tomorrow, if you want to give a mention of that real quick.
At 1010.
At 1010.
That's what I'm going to be on, and we will be expanding on my talk with him last week on the 9th. of October about the same subject.
Yeah. And of course, people outside the area can find that at WHKRadio.com as well. But more about that later. We're out of time. I want to thank you and thank everybody for listening tonight. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. God bless. Have a great week.
And the best to you and your family.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Late Night Live with Pastor Al. To learn more about Pastor Al Davis and Late Night Live, visit our website, livewithpastoral.com. That's livewithpastoral.com. You can also listen to past programs and read articles on a variety of topics by Al Davis at livewithpastoral.com. Pastor Al Davis invites you to visit him at the Bible Baptist Church in Richfield, Ohio, next Sunday morning at 11 a.m., next Sunday evening at 6 p.m., or you can join us for our Friday night Bible study from 7 to 9 p.m. The Bible Baptist Church meets at 4174 Wheatley Road, Suite 200 in Richfield, every Sunday at 11 a.m., 6 p.m., and every Friday at 7. You can contact Pastor Al by writing Pastor Al Davis, Post Office Box 452, Richfield, Ohio, 44286, or email Pastor Al at pastoral@maplenoel.us. And tune in every week for Late Night Live with Pastor Al, Sunday nights at 11 on this station. Late Night Live with Pastor Al is brought to you by the Bible Baptist Church in Richfield, Ohio.